Good morning, everyone.
Hello.
How's everybody doing? Can I get a thumbs up for everybody who's doing good today? Awesome. At least half of the room, so we're good. So welcome to our presentation. My name is Joy Hernandez, and I am the LGBTQ Student Rights Advocate at the ACLU of Southern California. And then, James, you want to introduce yourself?
I'm James Gillum. I'm the Deputy Executive Director at the ACLU of Southern California, and I direct our LGBT project and our anti-bullying project.
So we're going to go over a multitude of things today, focused specifically on the rights of LGBTQ students and how that plays out in school. So to get started, we're just going to go over a couple of basics. We're going to talk about a couple of different definitions. So we're going to talk about a couple of different terms, and we're going to want to put our mindset in the place of not everything is in mutually exclusive boxes. So we're going to want to talk about things on a spectrum, and gender is one of those things. Gender is how a person identifies. So we can talk about gender identities as from a man or a woman, and then we want to think about it as a spectrum with all of these identities in the middle, including genderqueer.
And then gender expression is how a person expresses their gender. That's also on a spectrum. So we have masculine and feminine. And if somebody identifies somewhere in between, then that person is considered androgynous.
And sex. Sex is something typically we think about as either male or female. But sex refers to a person's biological sex. And this continues to be on a spectrum. So we have male, female, and then also intersex in the middle.
And then sexual orientation is how a person identifies based on their emotional, psychological, and physical attractions. So it's, you know, who they're attracted to. Some people are attracted to only women, some people are attracted to only men, and a lot of people fall somewhere in the middle. And those people can identify as bisexual or pansexual.
So when we think about the roles that society places on stereotypical men and stereotypical women, we think of very straight lines. We think of a man is masculine who is male and is attracted to women, and on the opposite end of the spectrum we have a woman who is feminine, who is female and is attracted to men. But in reality we can have examples where all of this hits the fan and you have lines and arrows going all over the place, and that really speaks to the diversity of the queer community. And so when we talk about queer community and the way that rights come into that, it's also just as intricate and nuanced. So the different kinds of rights and freedoms that we're going to talk about today are freedom of speech, freedom of expression, right to equal protection, right to assemble, right to privacy, right to unbiased sex education curriculum, and right to freedom, right to be free from harassment. So freedom of speech. It's not necessarily something that this is going to be true for all of the freedoms and expressions that we talk about today. It's not something that students give up when they go to school. So the U.S. and California constitutions apply on campus. When a student wants to be able to express their freedom of speech, they can in the appropriate places. And so one of the things, a couple of different examples of how the queer community expresses that is through gay pride parades, and specifically on campuses through events like Transgender Day of Remembrance, Day of Silence, and Heart People Day. And if I'm talking too fast, if you have any questions, just let me know. So the First Amendment protects the freedom of speech that we've gone over already. It guarantees students the right to speak our minds, including LGBTQ issues, regardless of public opinion. So just because of the fact that people have different opinions about the LGBTQ community or about society in general, doesn't mean that the LGBTQ community can't express how they feel or express the opinions of our community. And it allows students to share their stories, be who they are, and build public support for LGBT equality. First Amendment ensures that the government cannot censor LGBTQ people or discussions of LGBTQ issues. And so that's really important. It's about talking about our issues, the things that are relevant to us, and what are relevant to all students. And so it applies in a couple of different ways. So the freedom to be out is one of those. Courts have found that this is not inherently sexual. It's about identity. It's about how students talk about who they are as individuals, not necessarily talking about sex education, but talking about their individual identities. And then they are able to do these things inside the classroom. So when we talk about like the freedom of speech, we're not talking about like lunch or passing time. We're talking about specifically in curriculum in the way that they are able to do work. And so class projects, book reports, t-shirts, armbands, buttons, and bulletins, bulletin boards, some of these are not related to curriculum, but it is a way, if the subject matter is related, then it can be applicable to the way that we talk about LGBT issues in the classroom.
Has anyone ever had any of these issues come up in schools, either with yourselves or know of anyone who's been told, for example, that they can't write a book report about Harvey Milk, or they can't write a personal experience essay about coming out?
Do you want to comment a little bit on that?
I've done a lot of work in Marin County for the last 12 years, and there are a few schools who try to discourage kids from doing starting on gay straight alliances. And that applies to some teachers who are uncomfortable with what they consider to be issues that are controversial related to sexuality.
Yeah.
And so we've actually had to we go and we explain to the principal that this could lead to some serious trouble if you don't.
And that's why that bullet is so important, because so many times schools will say, we can't have a club forum to talk about sex. And so there's courts that said talking about your sexual orientation is not inherently sexual. I mean, it is not automatic that you're going to be talking about topics that are not appropriate for an eighth grade classroom. Did you want to share real quickly what your experience has been?
Well, I guess it actually ended up getting me involved with a lot of LGBT issues. But in high school, we were given difficulty and we were discouraged in giving a runaround for our GSA to be able to have club shirts.
Okay.
Or to be able to have a booth at a fair.
Okay.
Or, you know, even just have announcements of club meetings and a school newsletter.
So. And that's coming up in Joey's presentation.
Yeah. Great.
And so there are limitations to freedom of speech. With each of these freedoms, there comes the certain line where there are limitations. So interrupting and disrupting class time, that's when discipline issues get into the picture. Encouraging rule breaking, saying obscene things, lying, or defaming. And so freedom of expression is another thing that is really important to the LGBT community and to students specifically. So students have the right to attend prom and other school dances with another student of the same sex. So when issues come up with that, there tends to be a lot of barriers that are put up from the school. And what we do on a regular basis is educate students that they do have these rights. Has anybody ever experienced something like that or ever heard of situations like that on their campus? Awesome. So students have the right to express their gender in the way that they feel comfortable with. So when we talk about gender nonconformity and that spectrum and students that fall in between and that sort of genderqueer definition, dress codes can be a definite problem. So when policies specifically say a boy must dress in this particular manner and a girl must dress in this particular manner, then our gender nonconforming and our transgender students in schools have a problem. They try to figure out where they fit into this very heteronormative structure of policies when they actually don't fit in it at all. So that's why we advocate for policies that are inclusive of all of our students. And schools also filter websites sometimes that are pro-LGBT, and that's also an infringement of civil rights. So when we talk about that, it's because resources should be available to LGBT students about the LGBT community. It's not necessarily all about the negative aspects that are usually public in schools, but also about allowing our LGBT students to have access to those resources as well.
Okay, so freedom of assembly. One big way that freedom of assembly applies to LGBT students in schools is when they're trying to form gay-straight alliances. So federal law requires schools to allow gay-straight alliances to form and meet if it allows other non-curricular clubs to exist and meet on school property. So the difference between curricular clubs and non-curricular clubs is curricular clubs are directly related to what kids are learning in school, so like math clubs or science clubs, whereas non-curricular clubs are like a knitting club or mountain biking club or a gay-straight alliance. So if a school allows one non-curricular club to meet, they have to allow others to have the same access to school facilities and having announcements and posting on bulletin boards and things like that. So meeting space, budget allocations, things like that. So the law that that regulates that is the Federal Equal Access Act. So, yeah.
So right to privacy. When we think about right to privacy in a larger spectrum, we can think about all the ways that the ACLU works on these issues. But when we also want to think about it of it being in the LGBTQ student perspective, and it's really relevant, especially with outing. So students have a right to privacy, which includes the right to keep information about sexual orientation private. As long as they, we'll talk about that last clause in a bit. But school officials may not tell the student's parents without their consent, even if the student is out on campus. And school officials may not use a student's sexual orientation to manipulate students in any way. So what are we really saying here? When there's either discipline issues or any sort of interaction between administration and parents, they're not allowed to disclose that information. Why is that relevant to our community? Because it can put our students in serious harm. So if a parent doesn't know about a student's sexual orientation and they come from a hostile home environment where sexual orientation is not something that's talked about or it's demonized in any sort of way, then that can cause a lot of mental health issues and cause a lot of physical health issues. And so the right to privacy really protects our students who are still coming about their sexual identities and still are trying to figure out what that relationship between themselves and their family and their sexual identity is. And then right to unbiased sex education curriculum. So this is really relevant to our LGBT students because we obviously have a different perspective coming from the queer community talking about how our sexual health affects us. And so if we go on this abstinence-only model, then a lot of students are left out, and it doesn't necessarily speak to the intricacies that our queer students face. So the California Comprehensive Sexual Health and HIV/AIDS Prevention Act, also known as SB 71, went into effect in 2004. And what it really did was take a lot of these conflicting and controversial laws and really just brought everything together and said, we have comprehensive sex education. And then all public schools must have a comprehensive sex health education. And for the teachers in the room, the codes are listed. So California law prohibits sex education classes from reflecting or promoting bias based on sexual orientation. So
can I just put this out? So I mentioned I was in Arizona a few days ago. They have a law that actually requires that they teach that heterosexual monogamous marriage is the preferred relationship, and you may not teach any safe sex methods that would teach that there is any way to have safe same-sex sex. Statute on the books. It's in Arizona, and Alabama has one very similar. So when I was talking about the work that we do here, funding other states, yeah, Arizona and Alabama have actually. And if you may be asking yourself, well, why is the ACLU not filing a lawsuit about that? The courts in Alabama and Arizona are very hostile to our community. So right now, bringing a challenge against those laws may end up creating bad law that would then be used to put those in place in other states. This all has to be done very carefully, and sometimes we have to tolerate some statutes that are really offensive until it's the right time to attack.
Unfortunately, in California, our LGBTQ students are not just tolerated, but also accepted and even celebrated in some of these laws, which is really wonderful. So we can't assume that everyone... Yes?
I just had a follow-up to the earlier point you made about disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that's in these laws you're talking about, or something the ACLU supports, or where I don't know where that appears in any legal context right now?
That is from a case that we did several years ago, the ACLU of Southern California, on behalf of a young lesbian student who was disciplined for engaging in public displays of affection.
Right.
And the school, we brought a case because what we were told at the time was that the school was only disciplining same-sex couples on campus and that they were allowing heterosexual couples to express PDA. As it turns out, the whole campus had a no PDA policy, and the PACs later showed that the school had disciplined same-sex couples, opposite-sex couples as well. So even though we didn't win that lawsuit, one of the rules we got out of that case, because what the school did in the process, the law requires the school to tell a parent if they're going to discipline their child. Our position is you can do that without outing them. So if you call a parent and say, we disciplined your child today for public display of affection on campus and that's against the school rule, you can stop there.
Mm-hmm.
What the school did was say she was displaying affection with another girl. And
right.
So one of the few judgments, one of the rules we got out of that case was the court saying that student had a right to privacy There was no reasonable expectation that her parents would know but that she was out because she was only out on campus, and the school had no right to out her when called the parents to tell them why they disciplined her.
So that has an effect then on other schools around the state?
Well, it's a trial court level decision, it's reasoning and argument that we plan to use more, and we also believe it's rooted in the California. California has a strong right to privacy in our Constitution that's much more clear than the federal Constitution.
So right now it's just a ruling that you think will protect people in the future, but it's not in law technically.
Correct. It is not precedential value from the case, but it is our belief of what the law is.
Yeah.
You'll also hear us, for example, say to you that transgender students have a right to use the restroom of their gender identity, that they have a right to be called the preferred gender pronoun, that they have a right to be called by their preferred name, even if it's a name that wasn't given to them at birth and doesn't conform to their sex. There's no case that says any of that. There's a statute in California that says schools may not discriminate on the basis of, and sexual orientation and gender identity are included. We believe that means that you have to allow those things, because if you don't, you're discriminating against your transgender student. Mm-hmm. We don't have a case that says that yet. Mm-hmm. That is our belief of what the law is. We're looking for the right case to file to make that more clear. Jelly and I are working with a 10-year-old transgender student right now in fifth grade. That would not have been the case to file this in, and thankfully the meeting that we had changed the way the school is treating that student, so she is now able to present as female and is safe. Mm-hmm. As a 10-year-old transgender student, that's something we got accomplished in just the last 2 months without having to file a case. But when I was threatening them to file a case, we knew in the back of our minds that was not a case we were going to file, because the first case we filed to begin making clear what the rights for transgender students are probably won't happen in the elementary school context. So that's what we mean when we tell you these rights, but it is a good disclaimer, sir, to say some of these rights are more explicit in case law, but we would never tell you rights that we don't have a really strong belief that we could go to court and argue for if we had to. We're just looking for the right context in which to do that. And this is that law that has all the categories.
I have a question about the Gay Straight Alliance or the forming of clubs. They have to be sponsored by a faculty member, and at many schools no one will step forward
and that is the challenge.
Sponsor it. So I don't know if outside, at my current school we have a parent that comes in and does a Lego club. He's not a teacher. So I'm wondering if community members could rent the school facilities.
It depends on the school district policy and what they say about how they're able to structure non-curriculum based clubs.
But so in that school, if a parent is doing a Lego club, then I would argue a parent ought to be able to start the GSA, because then if not, you're treating this club different, and that you can't do. If you can't have, some schools have tried to say to be in the GSA, you have to have your parents sign a permission slip. That doesn't make any sense, unless the school requires a permission slip for every non-curricular club.
Good.
If a school has a walk-on coach, does that count as a club?
No.
No?
It does not. Because that would technically be a school-sponsored event, not an extracurricular activity.
Even though it's after school.
Mm-hmm. They have to be in charge of that activity or something.
Yeah, so if it's like a sport that's facilitated through the school, that's a different category of activity.
We're very lucky. Joey's used to work with the Gay Straight Alliance, GSA Network, so he has great background in this particular stuff.
Yeah, there's a question in the back.
Now, this was 13 years ago when I was in high school, but... We had started what we called a flag club, which is like the equivalent of a GSA. And in order to shut it down, they had to shut down all club activities. And the football team ended up being part of that, and that's when the parents got pissed off. Never mind, and let us do it. And so that was our school district's rules at the time. So I'm wondering if it just kind of also depends on the school district, because I know that that was the case.
So the reasoning behind that having to shut down all of the other non-curriculum-based clubs is based on the Federal Equal Access Act and having to treat all non-curriculum-based organizations the same. However, it is on a school district basis how they want to structure this process and the actual steps that you have to take to organize a non-curriculum-based club is up to the district. So let's say that there's a Harry Potter fan club and they tell you that you have to submit an application and get it approved by the principal and the superintendent, etc., etc., then yes, the GSA has to do similar steps. However, if they have that policy and they're only enforcing it against the GSA, then that's when you can have some leeway with working with the district.
in the 13 intervening years, we've done a few cases where schools that have tried to do a wholesale elimination of all clubs, we've been able to show that is a reaction to the application for a GSA and have been successful in getting that stopped.
Any other questions? Comments? Awesome.
Does all of this apply only to public schools? What about private schools?
The private schools are an interesting thing, and we can talk about charter schools and other public schools, but private schools are a really interesting fact because they don't receive government funding. So no.
Right.
It's really up to that individual school to see what they want to do.
So it's really not much.
No, it really depends on, and that's where a project is really wonderful in the fact that it's not only about litigation, it's also about engaging the community and creating policies for local organizations to really advocate for our LGBT students. And so in that case, it would really be about working with the members of the community at that school to advocate for LGBT comprehensive policies.
And we can still do that. You know, there used to be, so certainly, it is true, like the ACLU, when they would get a call from a private school student, would have to say, the people who are wearing their impact litigator hat would have to say, there's nothing we can do for you. You can't even write a strongly worded demand letter if you can't cite some law. But our project, what I'm so proud about, the project that we have now at the Southern California affiliate, and really is becoming statewide, is a climate-changing project. I am an attorney, but I don't want to file cases. I'm the deputy director. I have a lot of other things to do besides go to court and build status conferences. So my hope is that we can give these resources to school districts and say, you have an issue in your school, you can affect it, you can change the climate here by looking at this resource from GLSEN, which is the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Educators Network. They just recently released a really great document for K-5 schools. So that's what Joey and I used at the meeting that we had with our 10-year-old transgender client. And I don't see any reason why Joey and I couldn't hand that same resource binder off to a private middle school. Because we, you know, we're kind of implicitly saying, we're the ACLU and we could sue you, but I really never had to say that. What I said was, the Department of Education, because this was a public school, could be concerned, and you can't stop private litigants. And so, if the worst case happens, we've all heard about the Larry King case, if the worst thing happens to a school, to a student at school, regardless of whether the ACLU can sue you, a parent might be able to. And so we try to encourage them to understand the need to change their school climate and give them resources. And that's what Joey and the rest of our project staff spend lots of time doing, researching and looking for what are the appropriate resources to give to different schools. So our project can now do something about what private school kids are enduring, whereas before we've kind of not really been able to help them.
We got one question here, and then we'll go to Pat.
Sex law adds a great deal of impetus to this.
Absolutely.
Too, right?
Yes, sir.
It could be carried over to a private school.
I believe sex law is only also for the public school, but we can use the training.
It's
that's
really
exactly
focusing
right.
The public's attention on
intervening. That's the main thing. We hear from the LGBT students that teachers only intervene 32% of the time. And so Seth's Law, which we got passed this year, requires teachers to intervene to stop bullying when they see it. Now the challenge for us, we're the ACLU. We love the First Amendment, and we use the First Amendment to protect LGBT students. So what does it mean to intervene to stop bullying without infringing on the First Amendment rights of the other students who also don't shed their rights at the schoolhouse table? You know, as a gay student, I had my rights, but so did the person who had a religious belief that it wasn't okay to be gay. And so how do you balance all those rights? And teachers are now asking us, okay, you want me to intervene as of July 1st, what does that mean? And so this summer, we're really going to be combing resources and looking at recommendations from the National Education Association, from all kinds of different groups, and what do they say you ought to do to stop bullying when you see it? And we're going to pull from those resources and create what is the ACLU's recommendation for intervening and addressing bullying in a way that still protects the First Amendment and doesn't water that down, because we're going to need it for our next prom case, our next equal access case. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so that was, my question was about bullying when it isn't part of the LGBT community and how the ACLU will be involved.
Yes, and so our project is broader. It is, the mission statement of the project is to stop the unlawful bullying in California schools and to create school communities that promote safety and respect for all students. And so that really is purposely broadly written. That being said, September 2010 was about LGBT students. October 2010, the federal government issued a Dear Colleague letter saying to schools, you need to do something to protect this community. And then I applied for a grant from the David Bonet Foundation, which is an LGBT funder, and hired Joey to do this work full time.
And so the resources that we have right now are LGBT exclusive because that's the funder we have, but the law is broader. The trainings that we give can be applied. Certainly the speeches that I give and the talks that I can do can be more broad, and we're hoping to be able to expand our program. But for the most part, the student calls us who's being bullied based on race or religion or disability, we would also be able to help them. And Seth's law applies to them too. The teachers are supposed to intervene to stop all bullying.
But what if it isn't based on any of those things?
And that question comes up all the time. It just came up 2 days ago for me in Arizona. It's tough. And that we had this conversation, and the audience was not comfortable with my answer, which is that we can't work on that. But the reason we can't is because now we're getting into a much deeper conversation about what are California's anti-harassment and anti-discrimination laws. And all we can do to enforce the law against the school is to have them not discriminate against students who are in those protected categories. And so to make our bullying project broader and to be able to say to a school, you have to do something about the kid that gets picked on because, frankly, I was as round as I was tall. I got picked on for that, too. There is nothing that we can do about that, but it's not a fallacy of the ACLU's project. It's not a fallacy of the CESS law. It's the broader issue of what are the anti-discrimination and anti-harassment laws in California, and those are the only ones we can buttress with these other piecemeal pieces of legislation that we're passing.
It's a good start.
It's a good start, but there are certainly kids who are not protected, and we know that, and that's not comfortable. I don't like that, but between the funding limitations and the legal limitations of which groups are protected under our hate crime laws, it's really difficult for us to think about what are we going to do about the kid who's picked on because he's short or fat, unless there's a disability that affects that. Then you've got to weigh in to protect him.
And there is hope with that. By working on the school climate from the categories that are protected in the anti-harassment laws, hopefully bullying in itself will be eliminated from the school, which is a long-term goal.
Yeah, because the messaging you can imagine the ACLU is going to say is not going to be, don't say this word. It's going to say, imagine what it feels like to treat someone that way, and imagine how difficult it is to get an education when this is the environment you have to face. And to the extent we can build empathy in these students to not call people gay or lesbian or tranny, hopefully we can also get them to stop calling people short and fat and making fun of their glasses or whatever else kids get picked on.
Mike, did you have a question?
It's mostly been answered, but I'm just saying there has to be a line between expressing your view of either homosexuality or race and taking action based on that.
And there is.
And difference.
And even the expression. You can only express the same thought to the same student so many times.
You can't do it twice a day, every day,
right,
or whatever.
Because then you're infringing on their right to an education.
Exactly.
And that's the other part of the standard.
To that extent, you can prosecute anybody.
That's right.
And then that's when we actually look at individual cases, and that's something that we have to do on a regular basis with all the intake that we get, with looking at all of the nuanced situations and trying to figure out where that line is in that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting into some schools in Northern California, part of the trick is when you see bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how do you...
And
you
got to
get them to see it before you
get
them.
Right.
And that's definitely, exactly. Seth's law is really going to be able to work on that aspect of bullying, which is outside of the classroom. When we're talking about lunch periods or passing periods or when other educational staff are seeing the bullying, not just holding the teachers accountable for when someone speaks out of class and that's considered bullying. It's really about this holistic attempt of eliminating bullying from our public schools.
And not just saying the students just paid 2 cents.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
We were at a high school recently, and the students were telling us this certain corner is where all the fights happen, and there's no cameras, and there's never any administrators. And so part of our recommendations to that school will be, you just need to put someone from the personnel over on that part of campus. That's a way to address bullying that doesn't have anything to do with infringing on someone else's rights. So there's a way that we can do this. It's common sense conversations, and I love having
it. Any other questions before we move on? Awesome. So the California Student Safety and Violence Prevention Act, also known as AB 537, went into effect in January of 2000. And it changed the Ed Code by actually adding actual or perceived sexual orientation and gender to existing non-discrimination laws. So this is really when California was on the crux of protecting our LGBTQ students.
There are only 12 states with an inclusive statute.
And so all the other categories that were listed already and which are still protected now are sex, ethnic group identification, race, ancestry, national origin, religion, color, mental or physical disability. And so the California Student Civil Rights Act of 2008, also known as SB 777, created uniform non-discrimination standards in the Ed Code. And so that's really important for us because that's actually a lot of the work that we do is really focused on helping school districts and schools comply with the uniform complaint procedures and making sure that our queer students don't fall through the cracks. And then also, gender was redefined as meaning sex, which also included a person's gender identity, gender-related appearance, and behavior, whether or not stereotypically associated with the person's assigned sex at birth. And so this may seem a little convoluted when thinking about to the terms that we went over in the beginning, but then we also have to think about the words that are common in our community in comparison to what's in the law and sort of how the ACLU and other community members can translate that into bits of information that everyone can really understand. And so, but what this was really impactful for was our gender nonconforming and our transgender students. Because this is really important for being able to protect students, especially our transgender students. And so CESS Law, which we've been talking about a little bit, and there's handouts about it, feel free to take as many as you like, English and or Spanish, goes into effect this July. It's a new California law that strengthens the existing state anti-bullying laws. And then, do you want to talk about this?
Yeah, sure. So what schools are supposed to do? The law puts lays a plan out for them. And so the most important thing in California is they're supposed to have a strong anti-bullying policy that specifically enumerates the protected categories. So I don't know if anyone heard about the case from Fullerton High School. There's a boy who a couple weeks ago at the Mr. Fullerton pageant answered the question of where do you see yourself in 10 years. He said, hopefully there'll be gay marriage will be legal in California and I'll be married to a man that I love. The vice principal marched up on stage, pulled him out of that competition, disqualified him. Talk about not having the right to be out. So Jilly and I are looking at that case and the first thing we did was pull their non-discrimination policies, and they don't have one that specifically enumerates the categories that are required by state law. You may be asking, well, why not? How can they just knowingly violate the law? Because they know the state doesn't have anyone to come around and do Public Records Act requests or look at their policies or walk in the door and say, show me your handbook. So there's no one enforcing the great laws that are on the books. That's what our project does. So now we send, and we'll be on Monday or Tuesday when we get home, sending a Public Records Act request to the Fullerton Union High School saying, give us a copy of your non-discrimination and anti-bullying policy. As they are putting them on the fax machine, they ought to be thinking about calling their counsel because they should know that they are not in compliance with state law. We know that an inclusive policy is important. When I give this speech, people all say to me, why can't you just say bullying is prohibited? And then it would protect some of these other categories. The problem is when you've got a general policy like that, like 38 other states have, teachers say to us, well, I don't have to protect the LGBT kids. They're not specifically included. And so that's why it's so important to have an enumerated policy, because it gives clear direction to teachers and students about what their behavior should and shouldn't be. The law also requires that they have the specific process for their complaints. The law requires that they process those complaints a certain way. They're supposed to give a written response back to students within a certain number of days. We have a case where there have been 14 written complaints filed over the last several years. In not one instance was the student who filed the complaint ever interviewed. In not one instance has the student ever received a written response to their written complaint. That's what we've been told by the students. We confirm that by doing a Public Records Act request to the school and say, show me any responses to the following 14 complaints. Give them a chance to show that they actually have a process that works. But again and again, when we hear from these students, it doesn't take peeling back one layer of the onion, looking at their policies, or show me, they're also supposed to do trainings. So we say, show us your calendars of trainings and give me the sign-in sheets. Sometimes we look for certain names because it's certain teachers. There's a substitute teacher at one school who's the worst. They don't even have to go to the training. So what would we do? Advocate that you also include your substitutes in the training because Ms. So-and-so is actually the worst offender on this campus. And even if she's here one day a week, it creates terror for all the LGBT students.
Should a public records request be something that should be done for all districts around the state? Just to...
And actually,
So that's one of the projects that we're working on right now with some of our community partners, which is looking at every single non-discrimination policy and uniform complaint procedures of every district in the state. And so that's one of the next steps. So a lot of them have already been compiled already, and we've already endured probably like over 1,000 school districts of all of their policies and their handbooks, because the third bullet point is being able to publicize that, and that includes on their website and in their parent handbook. And the thing is, the crazy thing is that the majority of the school districts are not in compliance. But that's one of our next steps, is for those that we haven't been able to receive, we're going to send out a slew of PRAs to send out to all of the school districts that either don't have them published or haven't responded to us. So that's definitely one of the goals. Yeah.
Is there currently some central location in the state that could eventually collect all these, or all of anything like these in the future? It just seems with electronics, you know, transmissions, that you don't need to have a piece of paper in a drawer now for all these things.
Yeah, and so that's what
I don't know if that agency exists right now that could do that.
Well, we're working with the Gay Straight Alliance Network. They're the ones that are primarily doing this project.
But I'm talking about a state agency.
So yeah, there is no state agency at the time. Unfortunately, a lot
Department
of what
stuff
gets gutted. And so Seth's law was a lot stronger, and part of what it would have said also is that we would have created a position in the state for them to make sure the schools are complying with all these policies.
Okay.
That was taken out in the budget crisis. Nothing was passing out of committee that was going to cost the state any money.
I got it.
So that's all right. We'll do that work. Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that a lot of these things are left up to school district discretion, that is mandated by the California Department of Education, there tends to be issues, which includes consistency of these policies. And I know Marina had a question.
Yeah, I have a question. Something that you talked a little bit about high school students, but do these rules also apply to preschool children?
This is K through 12 specifically.
So preschool does not include preschool.
It's questionable. It depends on how preschool is framed in the individual school, but most of the time, no.
Even though it's state
and federal funded. And that's why it depends. So, because some preschools work outside of the California Department of Education. So that's something that we would have to look at on an individual basis.
It's a really interesting question. I wanted to think about that.
Because
parents
in the community. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
No, but yeah, and that's definitely that we can talk to you about afterwards, and that another project that we can add to our list that we would love to work on.
In your spare time.
In our spare time, yeah. Any other questions? Yeah, and then we'll get back to it.
Will Seth's law be enforced in charter schools?
It depends.
Public charter schools.
Public charter schools. Yeah, schools that the charter schools that receive government funding or state funding, that's our avenue to get in there. And then I have a question in the back.
Yeah, two questions. I think it's terrific that you're doing this compliance checks on the schools for this. Is this just in the Southern California affiliate right now where this is being done? And number two, understanding that they took the compliance mechanism out of the state law because of the budget stuff, is there still in the hopper somewhere? Should finances reverse themselves? Thinking about trying to get that put into the budget, state compliance mechanism?
It's statewide, and two, one of the lobbying efforts that we're working on right now with some of our community partners, where we'll actually be in San Francisco, Sacramento again in 2 weeks for Queer Youth Advocacy Day, is working with JLAC, which is the Judicial Legislative Advocacy Committee, and lobbying to them to use the funding that's already in their budget to work on this audit of non-discrimination policies and uniform complaint procedures all over California.
Terrific. Thank you.
Yes.
But local activity can put the spotlight on a district that's not doing its
definitely
job, that they don't have a policy, or it's not being enforced, that could be brought under the Equal Protection Act. In other words, if they're ignoring certain kinds of things, you know, I think there's a lot of ways to bring a lot of pressure on districts that aren't measuring up.
Definitely. And that's how we work with local advocates, to really work on these individual districts that are so troublesome. So like some of the ones that are out in the Inland Empire that we're working on right now, that's where it's coming from, the community members letting us know about this work and then continuing to work with them to make sure that we continue to advocate for our queer students.
The parents have the most power at the school. If you meet the parents, you know, the meeting that I talked about with Joey and I did was also with our client and with our client's mom. And that, you know, that makes a big difference when you get the parents organized.
Yeah. Any other questions before we move on? So what are school... Oh, we already took this part. Mm-hmm. California law is designed to protect LGBTQ students and provides for penalties against schools and school officials for failing to do so. Students do not have to be bullied, which is always a takeaway that we want the community to have. And then schools are required to protect against harassment. So they may not ignore it, they may not say it shouldn't be expected, and may not say they didn't know they had to protect students. So this is like deliberate indifference of administrators. This is really talking about the morality that tends to come in when we're talking about bullying and LGBT students, and then just ignorance in general, not allowed. And then when we're talking about our queer students aren't allowed to be harassed for being gay, for being perceived as gay, for being friends with gay people, for having gay family members, or for dressing in any particular gender normative clothing. And so that really goes back to those key words of actual or perceived and association with. So those are some of the strongest words that are in our laws that really protect so many of our students. So it's not just about the stereotypical gay student that's on campus, but also maybe someone who's just being perceived as a lesbian or bisexual or transgender that is also protected by these laws. And then also for being friends with the LGBT community, obviously allies are one of the hugest part of our community, and being able to protect them as well from harassment is key.
Do you want to
talk about?
Yeah, we can just quickly go through. Just there have been a lot of cases. The ACLU has been involved in several of these. Settlements have ranged from $45,000 to over $1 million with school districts. So a couple of the examples up here: Massey with Manning Unified. Eighth grade girl comes out as a lesbian. They tell her she can't participate in PE anymore because the other girls don't want to dress down around her. And so they have her sit in the principal's office every day for that. So she doesn't get physical education, which often is some presidential push for all of us to do so many pull-ups here, right? She doesn't get to do that. And imagine what people think about the student who spends an hour a day in the principal's office. And so she was able to settle her case, $45,000. Banning Unified is basically on the way to Palm Springs from L.A. The first time I drove out there and I said, welcome to Banning. I'm like, speed up a little bit. Then again, I spent two nights ago, I slept in Sheriff Joe Arpaio's county for a night. I've never felt more unprotected. Flores, Morgan Hill, that's of course a Northern California case. Six students there for a number of years worked together. This case was on behalf of a group. There, this school officials failed to protect them, and the settlement we got out of that was over $1 million for that group of students. The first case was 1996, the Jamie Nabosny case. There's an excellent documentary called Bullied from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Fantastic. Really puts the person behind the story about these cases. And so since his case, like I said, we've had these settlements from $40,000 to $1 million.
Yeah. Besides the monetary awards, do these school officials get disciplined or punished in any way?
Well, what happens, disciplined or punished against individuals, sometimes individuals can be sued in their individual capacity, so there have been a few cases where that's come, but what we really focus on is changing the school climate, and so implementing policies that are inclusive, requiring trainings. What we found in our case in Tehachapi with Seth Walsh's mom is that by requiring the district to change, the superintendent didn't want to be a part of that district, and so the superintendent is no longer there. So in a way, you could say that individual, for failing to protect Seth, has lost his job. And imagine how easy it's going to be for him to get a new job as a superintendent of a district, having seen, you know, what happened in that case.
There's statistically significant employee turnover when issues like this are brought to a school district.
In the case of Flores, part of the settlement was that they had to have court monitored training for the whole school, from janitors to the principal, etc. And yeah, I think the training was done by the GSA network, which must have been an interesting turnaround.
Yeah, you make a lot of interesting points. The janitors, the school bus drivers, those are called extended school personnel, ESP. It's really important that the ESP part of the school community are included in the training. The teachers say they don't see it. Well, that's because I got beat up in the bathroom. The teachers don't come in the bathroom, but the janitor might have been there tasing the trash while I was getting beat up. Did he try to stop it? No, but he could be taught how to. So all the members of the school community need to be trained, and it's the training that we most, really, it's the main thing we focus on in our cases. If a mom comes to me and says, I want to sue the school district for what my student went through, and I believe that we deserve
this amount of money, I would tell her to go find a plaintiff's lawyer who will do that case on contingency. Mm-hmm. We are looking for forward-looking climate change cases that will create new law or expand the law for the people who are already here. We're not in the business of just giving people monetary awards for past conduct. And so that's really why we don't file very many cases. And that's why in our case with Wendy Walsh was more about policy advocacy and community engagement. And she hired a private lawyer to do her wrongful death case against the school district. We did not do that case. And that's what I say to schools. Regardless of whether I'm here to tell you I'm not going to sue you, and regardless of the fact we can say that even a private school like that, the DOE's not going to do anything. We can't stop the private litigants in the world. The moms, who are the ones who call us constantly, are mad, and they are going to do something about this, regardless of what the ACLU decides to do. And then there's some more case examples. The CNB Wolf case is the case where the PDA came and where we got the ruling that the principal had violated that student's right to privacy by outing her and her family.
Okay, so if you, I don't know if there are any high school students in here, but if you are a high school student and you are getting harassed in schools, there are things that you can do, and one of the most important ones is to file a complaint. The complaint procedure should be posted in the hallways conspicuously in California public schools. So you should be able to go to the main office and ask for a uniform complaint form. And when an incident of harassment does occur, it's really important that you document everything that occurred. So you want to have the date and the time, who was involved, if there were any witnesses, what exactly occurred. And then you want to write that on the complaint form and give it to the principal, and you want to ask the principal for a solution. And you don't want to just leave it there. You want to follow up. If the principal doesn't get back to you and if the harassment continues, you want to really try to work with them to find a solution. And after speaking with the principal, you should document that too, so exactly what you talked about, just so you'll have that in the future if that's not successful.
The documents are so important. Joey mentioned earlier the deliberate indifference standard. That is the legal language. Schools have, we have to show the schools are deliberately indifferent to what these students are going through. In order to prove that, you have to show they know. The best way to show they know is from the documents. So this is key. This is the most important really part of the stuff we're telling you about.
And just clarification, you do mean to ask for a solution on the document only. Because you're not supposed to walk in the door, hand them the form, and start talking about the solution at that time.
Right, right. You should just file the complaint and wait for your written response.
Just submit the request for a solution.
Maybe send Joey a copy.
And don't start a conversation at the time you file the complaint, because they haven't had any time to react.
Yeah, and part of the process is speaking with the administration after they've had time to do sort of their initial work and to start asking for alleviation of the situation.
Otherwise, you'll just get hostility.
Yeah, and if it's severe enough, then that's something that you definitely want to go immediately to your administration and say, here are the problems, let's figure this out right now because I'm unsafe with myself. Yeah. So that's obviously an extreme situation, but definitely a situation that we see.
Our mom of a 10-year-old transgender student that we're working with copies us every week on her email to the school. Because things are going pretty much okay, except the PE teacher doesn't want to call Zoe by her female pronoun. And so I said, well, then you need to write the principal and you need to copy us on that. And then a week later I check in and the PE coach is calling her Zoe.
Best education she could get.
Yeah, exactly.
Good for her.
If the written complaint to the principal isn't successful, there are steps you can take after that. You can file a complaint with the school district. You want to make sure that you report it within 6 months. And after you do that, the school district or their designated complaint officer has 60 days to respond or to conduct an investigation, make a decision, and send a report. And if, I guess if you don't like the decision that they make, you can appeal it to the California Department of Education within 15 days. And they will reach a decision within 60 days.
And the other thing that I wanted to note was that you can actually go directly to your school district as well. There's issues with the school, or you know that the administration is not going to be receptive to the complaint. You can always go to the school district directly. And then if they don't follow these procedures, that's when you call us, and then we sue them. No, I'm just kidding. but we can advocate on your behalf. Oh. So we're going to do a little exercise. So if we could have maybe these two rows kind of clump up together and then down right through here in the middle. So in between Meredith, and I can't see your name tag. so every, Meredith and everybody to the left, those two rows can get together and clump up. And then these two rows in the back, and then these two rows right here. So we're going to have a little bit of a discussion.
All right.
Table.
Oh, yeah.
So the way that this is going to work is that we're going to go through a couple different scenarios, and we're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of what happened in the scenario, and how we can talk about the possible repercussions of what happened, and also the benefits of what can happen from these discussions. Yeah. So this is going to be group number one. Right back here is going to be group number two. Up front, we're going to have group number three, and then we're going to have group number four out in the back. So scenario number one.
We're number one.
So the one you guys are going to be doing is this one. So Jessica is a transgender student at a California public high school. Jesse has just recently begun to transition at school. Alex is a student who was raised by conservative parents to believe that being transgender is morally wrong. Every day Jessie comes into the classroom, Alex taunts her and calls her names. When Jessie complained to the teacher said she should stop drawing so much attention to herself and should just wear normal clothes. So if you guys could kind of have a discussion about what, you know, if you think the teacher is following the law and what Jessie should do kind of in that situation, how she should proceed.
Group number two. So a group of students at ABC High School want to start a GSA because they feel it is needed on campus to combat harassment and discrimination. When they asked the principal, he said that they were not allowed to talk about inappropriate sexual topics. There are other clubs on campus, like the Democratic clubs. Other clubs are allowed to have posters talking about their clubs. So we want to talk about what happened, what went wrong, what went right. And then for group number three, Daniel is the advisor to a GSA club at a public school. He has filed 20 complaints on behalf of students for bullying and harassment from teachers and other students. None of the students have been interviewed about what happened. So, talk about do's and don'ts, right and wrong, and stuff. And then, four. Oh, awesome. So number four is, we've had a lot of technical difficulties this morning. Topic number four is, there it is. Jamie is a bisexual student at ABC School that was told by her principal that she was not allowed to violate the PDA rule by kissing her girlfriend on campus. While in the office, Jamie saw heterosexual couples being disciplined for the same thing. Let's talk about what went well, what went wrong, and then have a discussion about where we can move forward. So everyone will have like 5 to 10 minutes to talk about their scenarios. If you need me to put yours back up, we can put that up.
I think he said we're three.
Yes, they don't.
Yeah, but right.
So that's a bogus.
Yeah, I think that shows a clear pattern. It's probably done for a lawsuit.
Yeah. So, they want to get a copy of the school. So, you know, that document.
Public of Records Act for a It's like they're basically ignoring them.
I'm going to take a look at the school.
years in between Christmas and Christmas. It was so in the closet. Yes. That was
so we're going to burn the school down.
All right. So if everyone can face the front again, that'd be really great. You can wrap up your conversation.
They changed the name. It's no longer there anymore.
All right, so if we can hear back from group number one about some of the thoughts that you had. And anybody can speak.
Sorry it was so hot. I had the heat on, but now the air's on. That's good. It's a whole new world in here now.
Yes.
It's clear to us that
Jesse is not going to get any support from the teacher after the comment about normal clothes. Mm-hmm. And so we're thinking that rather than go to the teacher, Jesse might go to Alex initially and say, hey, I don't like this. Can you stop doing it? And failing that, then file a grievance with the school. Wait the 60 days.
And that's a great way to do it. And you don't necessarily have to wait 60 days for a school or a school district to get back to you. You can actively work with administration to alleviate the problems. Like if it's a serious situation, they have to take immediate steps to protect Jesse and make sure that all of their students are safe. But it's a great way of looking at intervention and how a bullying is not just about suspending everyone who is involved in this. Group number two. Anybody want to make any comments? Yeah.
So first of all, the principal is obviously off base in suggesting that if there's a TSA, they're going to be talking about sexual issues. Just like, I mean, it would be more appropriate to assume the football team will be talking about So basically, that clearly is singling out a certain group of kids who, I mean, in other words, the whole thing is based on a false assumption. So I think he would quickly get reoriented if this kid went to probably the ACLU to write a letter just saying, just for your information, we're happy that you're considering the GSA for your campus, and we know that you'll have a faculty sponsor. We'll ensure that all the discussions that take place among these students will be appropriate to your site. Thanks for your cooperation. Have a nice day. And if there's anything we can do to help you make the GSA a success, please don't hesitate to contact us.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a great way to look at it. Giving them resources and programming and ideas of how to facilitate these discussions and not necessarily just making a blank statement or whatnot. So, yeah, that's wonderful. Any other comments from scenario two? Awesome. Scenario three. Any comments on scenario three? Anybody? Yeah.
Well, I think one of the biggest things we noticed was 20 complaints is a lot, and we were wondering if there is a limit on how many is too much with like their own school, like especially with HR getting involved, because it's not the students, the staff member.
They are staff.
Okay, staff.
So that's a very interesting question. But the way that this process initially works is, yes, the staff are involved and HR is down the line, but not necessarily part of the compliance part of it. It's about working with the district officials on figuring out sort of the trainings and discipline that they want to work on to make sure that the staff are ready and willing to be able to handle these situations in an appropriate manner. So, yes, HR is involved, but it's farther down the line than the initial steps.
We wanted to get also student, recordings of their testimonies from students who are either witnesses or also involved, and then kind of just purposefully hold people accountable and start pressuring people to be involved.
Yeah,
we don't want to just wait around. We're just going to start making noise. Subtly, but not violently. I guess that's kind of.
And bring it out at a staff meeting. I mean, obviously, it was protection for these students, and the teachers haven't had a training, and so they're not aware that they're breaking the law. Mm-hmm. So it would be a first step, too.
So does California law have a mandate as far as talent, as far as high school districts, that they have to have their staff trained for LGBT sensitivity issues, or is that up to, or is that discretionary to each district?
It's discretionary. Mm-hmm. It really depends. And that's the part that is troublesome for us when working with school districts, but it's about having those open discussions and talking about these issues with from the school district level on down, so that we're able to work towards those LGBT sensitivity trainings. Yeah.
So with that being said, is there any way that we can make it so it's not so discretionary?
Well, I would argue, first off, that once we know that a school knows this is going on, they're doing nothing about it, I would argue that that is evidence of deliberate indifference. So even though the law doesn't require that you do a training, once you know you have a problem in your climate and you're not addressing it, I would use, if I had to put the litigator on, evidence that that is deliberate indifference by the school. And that's why I said the cases we bring, the letters we write, the 15-point, we need you to do the following, they're all about change your policy, do some training, we can do the training, we can connect you to somebody that can do the training, never does it have anything, and please write a check.
And those become mandated.
Yeah, once they agree to do the training as a result of what we brought to them, then it's mandated.
Yeah, I have a question kind of stemming off that last question. Don't schools generally have, you know, sort of more proactive measures for other diversity trainings? I mean, mm-hmm. Is there any sort of way that there's we can implement that, whether it be, you know, mandated or otherwise, kind of statewide or...
Are there teachers in the room? Because are there teachers? Because I think that I've been told that you guys have a ton of trainings you have to do every year, and that
right,
there's not enough time to do another in-service. But I don't know if there's actually an in-service about all the other protected groups. If there is, I'd say you throw in the other two. But I don't think you have that training, right?
No, and with budget cuts and things, they don't put the money out to get teachers all together to do that.
So they're not being trained.
We have an anti-bullying program at our school.
They're not being trained at all.
I think that's something that's also that schools can also do. Is GSA Network will go into schools and they'll teach the GSA members how to do trainings in their classrooms. Mm-hmm. At my high school, the actual students went into our classrooms and we talked to our peers about these issues, and we found that that was the most effective thing.
Wow.
And when I was not, we didn't get to it when I was there, but this year they actually got the principal and the teachers to agree to let the GSA go in and do trainings for the teachers as well. So, and that was really successful in creating a dialogue on campus.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So, but the Teachers Association offers free workshops, districts to work with teachers.
Oh, I think there's a loophole as well, because I work in a charter and our trainings are half-assed. So, I think one thing is that there could be a sign-in sheet that says everyone signed it, and there could be a 20-minute PowerPoint saying, we were trained when we were really not appropriately trained. So, I think that's the other thing, is looking at the culture that's already pre-existing in your institution. And really reevaluating if the staff are up to par with what they really want to promote there, because oftentimes they don't care, and then your principal is like, well, you fulfilled the requirement, that's it.
And that's where we as community organizations and community members can really advocate to make sure that everybody is really getting the trainings that they need. So working on the district level, working with the charter schools, working with your own school to make sure. And we'll talk about some of the things that you can do in your own communities. So any other comments on scenario number 3? Awesome. Scenario number 4.
All right. So what we talked about a lot was the idea of the school. This is very vague, and we didn't know, you know, the specifics around the way that bisexual students were, that issue was treated by school officials, and the way that the heterosexual couples were treated by school officials. So we decided that the most important thing is consistency. With the few cases, so some of the points that were brought up lackadaisical consistency just in the dialogue that was had between school officials and students, making sure that the PDA was far the same, you know, that, you know, hand-holding, for example, wouldn't have this huge consequence for the bisexual couple when it would have to be something, you know, more extreme for the heterosexual couple. You know, whether or not, you know, it would be inappropriate for the bisexual students to be outed to their parents or to other, you know, students or other community members. Anything else? Yeah.
Yeah.
Consistency was our main thing.
That's great. And those are the two biggest takeaways, is consistency between all students that are being disciplined for the same role, and then also the privacy issue that you brought up as well.
So can you go back to scenario one, Joey? Let's take a look at scenario one. How many of you reflexively or would just say the answer to this is to suspend Alex, the boy who's bullying Jesse? Wow, okay.
Yay!
That's fantastic. We're done, bud. So let's hand out that we have zero tolerance policies. Does everyone have this?
Yep.
This is crucial. Let's get this passed around. So this document is prepared by the ACLU of California to help explain why zero tolerance policies don't solve the problem of anti-LGBT bullying. And it seems like all of you already know that, so you can just help us become our messengers about this. One of the things we are finding, I get it, my phone rings off the hook from mothers who are calling me about what's happening to their children. And what they say to me is, this would stop if they would just suspend the bully. The PFLAG chapters are our great friends. They get fabulous work done. But we know that one of the first things they do when we hear about a bullying issue in their community is often to run into the school and say, you need to suspend that student. So we are in the process now of re-educating our own community members and our own partners about why zero tolerance policies don't work for the LGBT community. So just so you all know, does people know what a zero tolerance policy is? Zero tolerance. First offense of committing certain acts on campus, you are suspended. You may think that means, all right, let's just get all the Alexes out. What we have seen from studies first is that suspending these students does not address the climate problem. We also see that these policies are often used against the students that the school doesn't want there. Mm-hmm.
So zero tolerance doesn't work under
any problem, right?
Yeah.
And then think about this. Think about what Dave told us last night. He went to jail 14 times and no one ever talked to him about the underlying problem. And so what we are saying, this is very similar. How many times would you suspend Alex before someone maybe begins to connect him to what it is that he needs in his life to be thinking about why he's engaging in such bullying behavior? What we see about zero tolerance policies, according to Sigford, is that they are used primarily against African-American male students, students with disabilities, and us. So one of our cases we had last year, a boy, the only boy who was on the cheerleading squad, had been being taunted by all the other girls on the squad, which just amazes me because those were my friends. How I found protection was being friends with the cheerleaders, because then all the football players that were dating them quit picking on me because they said, I'm not going to go out with you if you need the James. That's how I got my protection. But for now, for some reason, it's all the other cheerleaders who are saying to Andrew on a daily basis, faggot, we don't want you on our squad, get the F away from us. He reported it, the school did nothing, finally he'd had enough, and one day he said, you get the fuck away from me, and called her the B word, and they suspended him right then and there under the school's zero tolerance for profanity policy. So calling him a faggot was never a problem, but then him doing this was. Then he was up for, after that they actually asked him to sign a no contact contract with that student. He went home and put something on Facebook about, you know who, I can't stand you. They called him in then and told him he was up for expulsion for violating the no contact contract without using her name and on Facebook, not on a school computer. So they sent our First Amendment lawyer, who is now our legal director, to a suspension hearing with a student, and suddenly they said, this is not a suspension hearing. We would never suspend a student for Facebook comments. We just wanted to talk to him about what he had done. My point about all of this is the only time that school has used a zero tolerance policy was against a gay student. And so you can read this for yourself. You're all obviously very smart, and now we've got 50 more people who can help us with this messaging. But even more important, because I get it, believe me, when I started doing this work, I had to be educated about this by people in the ACLU. I was bullied. I would have thought the answer is get those kids out. I have learned a lot in the past year of doing this work, and so there are ways. People say, well, what do you mean? You can't be running an anti-bullying project and tell us suspension's off the table. It's not completely off the table. We're just saying, let's try to do some other interventions first. Let's try to connect them to some services. It may be that you need to suspend the student, but this reflexive, automatic use of that as the answer is what we're trying to stop. And on the back, we have what you can do. So we don't just leave you with, don't do the following. In the next several slides Joey's going to go through, we'll talk about that also. George wanted to say something and then Patty, and then we'll go through the slides which are going to reiterate what's on the back of the sheet. Yes, George.
Something that's really effective in dealing with these kinds of things is restorative practices and restorative justice in schools, where instead of kicking a kid out who's homophobic, you sit them in a circle with peers who've been affected by that kind of behavior and also other kids who may be gay-friendly. And basically, they talk about feelings and what impact these kinds of behaviors have on gay kids or kids who are perceived as gay or whatever. Pretty soon, it can change the way a kid behaves because he realizes, boy, this really hurts. I didn't realize how, you know, negative this was. And there's a case in Nevada a few years ago where a kid was harassing a young man who was actually trying to start a, who did start a GSA. And they basically had a series of meetings. They ended up going as a team to different schools, the bully and the gay kid, talking about, this is ridiculous, this is a friend of mine now. It totally turned it around, and that works.
Definitely.
There's a guy, a therapist named Izzy Coleman, who gives workshops all over on anti-bullying and in the Bay Area, probably elsewhere. He's written a book. I'm taking one for him next Saturday from Kaiser Permanente.
Workplace bullying is a whole.
Well, no, this is about children.
It's for
working with kids. And he talks about that. Suspension and telling the parents necessarily, all those things don't work and make it worse for the kid.
I forgot the crime piece. We're not lobbying on this on Monday, but we do have a bill. We are the sponsor of AB 1729, which would then put this alternative discipline scheme in place. It was part of Seth's law last year. It got gutted, but it was already written, so we came right back. And so Amiano is sponsoring that now. And so he's a one-sheeter, but actually I don't have. But it's on the ACLU of Northern California website. AB 1729 is working its way through the legislature. Hopefully we'll get that in place this year to give superintendents and principals some leeway to use alternative discipline.
So we won't be lobbying on it this weekend, but we will be lobbying on it in 2 weeks at our free youth advocacy day.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, is there overlap that, and maybe you're talking about the exact things that the Schools for All campaign?
Right, yeah. So okay. The Schools for All campaign is doing a presentation later, so there'll be more information about this particular bill in a different session.
Thanks.
Thank you. That was a great
segue.
Plug for that.
So we're just going to talk about a couple of different things that you can do at your own local schools and in your community to improve the school climate for all students, including LGBTQ students. So this is a safe school checklist for our staff. And when we talk about this list, it's always going to go from acceptance and tolerance all the way to the bottom, which is really what we're trying to get to, which is the celebratory aspect of our queer community. And so all staff are trained on preventing harassment and discrimination based on actual or perceived sexual orientation, gender identity, appearance, and behavior. And then also all staff stop harassment and discrimination every time it occurs in their classroom or on campus. And then all staff are trained on the mental health needs of LGBTQ. So it's really talking about the necessity of our community and how we can really improve it from the staff perspective. From policies, the school should publicize via the school handbook, the website, and then possibly posters, a harassment policy that specifically includes actual or perceived sexual orientation and gender identity, appearance, and behavior. And then all policies, including the dress code and discipline, are inclusive of transgender and gender nonconforming students, like we talked about earlier. School includes LGBTQ people and issues in the curriculum, which is related to Fair Education Act, the Fair, Accurate, Inclusive, and Respectful Education Act, which included LGBT history icons and social science classes in California on the K-12 level.
We just got that law passed this year. It's the first of its kind in the country. Keep your eyes out for the need to protect it. We thought that there were going to be signature gatherers out trying to get enough signatures to put a repeal of that on this November 12 ballot. It looks like they are now seeking enough signatures. The website says they will come to the ballot in 2014. So the hope is that they will repeal this, and you will see very similar to commercials to what you saw during Prop 8 with Mommy, Mommy, I learned today that I can marry a princess and two princesses can marry. The same fear-mongering is happening now, telling them that we're bringing, again, sex talk to campus. By talking about Harvey Milk and the historical icon he is, we're going to be talking about inappropriate sex to students. It's the argument. You're going to hear it. You're going to see the commercials. Help us protect the fair education.
So advocating for that on the local level was really key, and getting the accurate information out there is really important. And then making sure your school library has resources on LGBTQ people and issues. School allows students to access pro-LGBTQ websites and online resources, and that's definitely with our filtering campaign. That's definitely something that we work on regularly. School offers resources for parents and family members of LGBTQ people and for LGBTQ-headed families. So that really works towards celebratory attitude of the school climate for LGBT students. And then what can students do? You can have an active GSA on campus. Make sure that your students know about their rights and have a safe school. Make sure that your students are educated on how to file a complaint at either at the school level, the school district level, or at the state level. Students know where to get resources, information, and support about LGBTQ issues, including GSAs, but then also organizations like ourselves. Students are trained on LGBTQ people and issues, as well as how to stop harassment and discrimination, and we definitely, through the project at ECDU, can help out doing that. We can go to schools and teach students about their rights. And then students celebrate LGBTQ holidays and important days of action, including LGBT History Month, Harvey Milk Day, etc. And so it really talks about, do you want your school to be tolerant, accepting, or celebratory of LGBTQ community? And then turn those missing points from this checklist into action items for yourself to go back to your own community and improve the school climate for all students. Questions? Any last questions before lunch? Awesome.
Everybody remembers how long it took to get an elevator. You all were fantastic.
Thank you, everyone, for coming.